Now we come to the second lecture of the series, given in Dornach, 3rd of January, 1924. Rudolf Steiner starts by saying, "Now I would like today to continue the material which I presented yesterday, insofar as I will speak about the special peculiarities of the single human members." Remember yesterday, we differentiated the physical body and indicated that we can bring this physical body in direct connection with all that which can be represented in our human minds in the form of solid contours. Then we have what I would like to call the liquid organism. This liquid organism is permeated by the forces of the ether body, which, however, as some sort of original or sprunglich original components are united with the physical body. This liquid man is permeated by etheric forces. These are forces that work in a peripheral way. They're all around working forces. Then we have the astral body, which we have so to consider it that you cannot come out, you cannot really come to terms with it if you have a space consideration. As far as the astral body is concerned, it must be clear to us that we here are dealing with something which is of a purely qualitative nature, that it is nothing connected with it that has a quantitative consideration. This astral body we must represent to ourselves as existing in a world which is not the space world, not that space world which we know in the first place exists around here, you see, but it is something which exists external to this space world. Now we must think about the ego organization. Now the situation will be easiest to understand if we go directly from out of the ego organization. Now, what does this ego organization darstellt? What does it represent? Or what represents this ego organization? This ego organization is indeed perceptible in the physical world when we consider the Gestaltung, the configuration of the physical body. Naturally, in the physical world, it can only be perceptible in its inner and external Gestaltung of the physical body. However, when we consider this physical body of the human being, it must be clear to us that this physical body, as it stands there in the physical world, has nothing in common with the forces which work in the physical world. Since in the moment when the human being passes through the portal of death, the ego organization goes out of the physical body. And then what happens then? It occurs for the physical body the fact that he begins to be subjected to the forces of the external world. That, however, signifies that these forces of the external world destroy the physical body. They do not build it up. When you consider this fact, that the physical body is destroyed by the forces which exist in the external world of nature, you will unconditionally have to realize the following fact, that this physical, that the Gestaltung of this physical body can in no way be subject to the forces of the physical world. Or put it another way, that which is at the basis of the Gestaltung of the physical body, those forces do not exist in the physical world, because the forces in the physical world destroy that Gestaltung. And so when the ego organization configurates, gestaltet the physical body, forms a physical body, that indicates that what this ego does, it tears this physical body out of the forces which otherwise can be found in the earthly environment of man. With other words, this means the ego organization is something quite different from that which we find in the physical world. Now, this or ego organization is, to be sure, related, correctly related with death. This means that which all at once occurs at the point of death, that occurs continuously during the time of the earth life as a result of the working of the ego organization. Man actually is continually subject to a process of death. However, this death process is ausgeglichen, is equalized. Now, in order to you to get a picture of this total situation, let us consider it as a reversed Penelope problem. Imagine yourself that every day you occupy yourself in removing from the neighborhood of your house a pile of earth, and in the night, when you are not there, someone else comes along and piles it up again. And as long as this piling up of the earth continues, so you must always remove the earth. Only when at one time this pile of earth begins to become smaller and smaller as a result of the activity of the person who is shoveling it up, and finally it no longer is there, you have no more activity with it. This approximately is the ego organization in its connection to the physical body. Just imagine, think of the situation when you give nutrition to the physical body. Then you bring to the physical body substances from out of the earthly environment. Now, these substances which you bring, they have their own inner forces. They have a certain configuration of force. And when, for example, you take into yourself cooking salt as an addition to your nutrition, then this cooking salt, in the first place, because it comes in from the external world, it has in itself the inner activity drive which it has outside as cooking salt. To be sure, as soon as this salt reaches the realm of the mouth, you begin to take from it these properties. And insofar as you more and more take these properties from it, so that finally, when the ego organization works sufficiently extensively in you, then there is no longer within the cooking salt any more present that which was present in the cooking salt when it was outside in the external world. The cooking salt has become something completely different. The activity of your ego organization, it consists precisely in the fact that it has to transform the nutrition, the nutrients which you take up. When you no longer in the physical body have the possibility of taking up nutrients, then has the ego no longer the task. Just as you no longer has the task when no one piles up a new earth pile. Then there occurs precisely the incapability of taking up nutrients. There's no longer the possibility for the ego to work in the physical body from out of the warmth relationships. One can say that which is responsible for the fact that is no longer possible to transform the external substances so that they no longer have that property which they had in the external world, then you get a death situation. Well, I'm afraid personally, his analogy, I'm afraid Rudolf Steiner's analogy and how he's tied it in, I feel confused. Now, I hope you will make more sense out of it than I seem to make at the present moment out of his analogy. His analogy is somebody at night time piles a heap of earth in front of your house. During the day, you shove it away. At night time, that person again heaps the earth outside your house. Then you shove it away. There reaches a point when you have less earth to shovel away during the day. And this analogy, Rudolf Steiner says, is an analogy of the ego organization in connection to the physical body. Now, I don't know if the ego organization is the one that piles up the dirt at night, or the ego organization is the one that removes it during the day. It's not clear to me what the analogy is. Next point, Rudolf Steiner says, the ego organization takes that the external force, like cooking, like salt, has an external configuration in the external world. You take it into your body and the ego transforms it. So that's the activity of transforming the configuration of external substances. And he says the activity of your ego organization transforms the nutrients you take up. Now he says, when you no longer have the possibility of taking up nutrients, so the ego has no longer a task, just as you no longer have a task to shovel away earth if no one piles it up outside your house. So evidently from there, his analogy is that the ego is that agency that works during the day in removing the earth from the part from out of your house. But when the body can no longer take up nutriments, the ego can no longer work in the physical body from the warmth relationships in order, I presume, to transform the nutrition. If you don't take up nutrition, the ego has no more work to perform. This is what I can't understand, his last sentence, when he says that one can say that which is responsible for the impossibility that the external substances should be so transformed that they do no longer have in them what those external substances have, but are completely in the service of the ego organization, this is responsible for death. I'm just translating that as Rudolf Steiner says it, and as I say, it doesn't make sense to me. I hope it makes sense to you. And let's proceed further. Rudolf Steiner asks the question, what does the ego organizationally actually do with the physical body? This ego organization continuously destroys it. It does the same that death does, only this is continuously compensated through the fact that the physical body is capable of taking up external substances as nutrition, so that you have the polaric contrast between the ego organization and nutrition. But the ego organization signifies for the human being quite the same, only in a continuous activity, quite the same as what occurs at the process of death all at once. You are continuously dying through your ego organization. That means you destroy your physical body towards innen, nach innen, whereas otherwise the external nature, when you pass through death, destroys your physical body from the externally. In other words, I think he means that obviously the ego works in you internally and destroys the body, whereas when you pass through death, the whole of the external world destroys your physical body from the outside. According to two different directions is the physical body capable of being destroyed. And the ego organization is simply the totality of the destroying forces nach innen, towards the inner. You can say that the ego organization has the task to lead you into death. Later we will see why that is. In the first place, we realize that this ego organization, as if it has no other task than to continuously lead the human being towards death. But this process is hindered by the fact that a newer Nachschub, a new supply, occurs, and always this process of trying to lead towards death begins again. What confuses me in my thinking is that he says the ego organization is able to transform external nutrients so they can work in you, so therefore that's a positive factor as I see it, nutrition. But then he says, is this also, this ego is the one that leads to death? Well, let's continue. Rudolf Steiner says, so that we have the following. The ego organization is actually qualitatively identical with death, and the physical organization is actually identical with Ernährung, nutrition. So just diagrammatically put it, and later on we'll expand. Ego organization equals death. Physical organization equals nutrition, Ernährung. These both processes, which dominate as polaric processes in the human being, and between them you have the ether body and the astral body. Between the ego organization and the physical organism, there lies the astral body and the etheric body. Now, the astral body, it works directly into the aeriform of the human organism, and from there out on the bypath through the ether body upon the liquid organism and the nutrition or physical organism. In every human organ, every single human organ, we have a working together of the etheric and astral organism. If one considers, observes the working of the etheric organism on any particular organ, so this working of the etheric organism shows itself that the organ receives from this etheric organism sprouting spriesendes, sprossendes life. Everything which is in every single organ or in the organism as life force, that emanates from the etheric organism. If you consider the astral organism, it in every moment is such that this astral organism continuously has the tendency to lame growth, sprouting life, not to kill it, but to lame it. the Ego organization has the striving continuously to deafen, cause death to the organism and the single organs. And to it, there must be placed as a contrast that which, just as the nutrients taken up from the external world, continuously enlivens, invigorates the organs, and this in particular is very active in the child and youth of the human being. Standing in contrast to the etheric impulses, you have the activity of the astral body, which continuously lames, ablamped the etheric activity. Let's assume in your organism you only had etheric activity, only spreasing, sprousing life. You would never be able to come to a soul life. You would never be able to develop a consciousness. You would just vegetate away into a sort of plant existence. Everything wants to grow and to sprout, but in the pure growing and sprouting and spreasing and sprossen, there develops no consciousness. In order that consciousness should be developed, there must be lamed down the etheric spreasing and sprossing life. And with that, we have in an organ which is lamed down, herabgelamped. The word layman means to paralyze, to weaken. Herabgelamped, weakened down. And so we have in organs which are weakened down, we have already in normal life the actual continuous beginning of the process of illness. You're not able to develop a consciousness without continuously developing the tendency towards illness. So you'll be able to do that, but then you must be prepared to lead a vegetation life, vegetarna. If you want to develop a soul life, you want to come to consciousness, then you must take this vegetarian and weaken it. So just as you have a contrast between the physical organism and the ego organization, you have another contrast, but again in a weakened sense, you have the contrast, the polaric contrast in the etheric and astral organization, in which the astral organism continuously weakens that which is produced by the etheric organism. It's that which the astral organism day for every day in the human life performs, that is a continuous tendering tendency to illness. And that which the etheric organism does, that is a strotzende Gesundheit, exuberating healthness. And so if on the one hand, abstractly, you can say the human being consists of physical body, etheric body, astral body, and ego organization, you can say the human being consists out of nutrition processes, out of the spreasing health processes, out of the continuously working in illness processes, and out of that which is a continuous death-producing process, which, however, is always held back until, so to say, the death processes sum up together, integration together, and all of them are integrated together, all the single death processes are formed, work themselves up to a totality, and death enters. Now let's take this astral organism, which continuously has the tendency to make any organ, any single organ in the human being, or in the whole human being, can make the human being ill. All you need is a real healthy self-observation. When you exercise a real healthy self-observation, so will you come to realize that that is so, because there could not arise in you any feeling if this astral organism were not there. Just represent this to yourself. The etheric organism is there. It develops the life. The astral organism is there. It weakens, is ablehnt. Now in waking life, I'll speak later about sleep. Now in waking life, there is a continuous hin and her gehen, pendulation between a labile equilibrium occurs. In waking life, there's a labile equilibrium between the etheric and the astral aspects. And through that, man has the capacity of feeling. Man would not be able to have this feeling capacity if there wasn't this hin and her going, her gehen, hin and her gehen, the polaric process between the etheric and the astral. Now, I would just imagine that the astral activity is not immediately zurückgeschlagen, hit back by the etheric activity. When it is repelled, when you have a status nascendi, in which the etheric, activity repels the astral activity, then arises a normal feeling. We will see that in the physical, this is connected with the activity of the glands. When, however, the astral organization becomes mightier, so that the organ in its etheric activity is not sufficiently repelled, then that organ is too strongly grasped, taken hold of by the astral activity. And instead of finding a hin and her schwingen, there arises a deformation of the organ. And we have, simply through the fact that the astral body does too much of the ablehnen, of the weakening, namely that that which in the nascent state is harmonized, if that situation is weakened too much, you have there in the astral body the causes of illness. Indeed, the illness is so connected with the feeling that we are able to say the feeling man, the feeling life of man is actually the sole reflection of the life of illness. If in the time scale there occurs a hin and her pendulating, so lies the life of feeling always in the beginning, in the status nascendi, in the moment of arising. There lies at the base the same process which signifies the Überhandnehmen, taking the charge over of the astral. You get an illness process. Now, this German language expresses itself in a very ponderous way, but because of the constant repetitions, you can really see what he's driving at in spite of its ponderosity, I hope. Now, however, the situation can occur that the astral can recede and the etheric can take over the control of the situation. Then there arises an exuberance, an illness towards the other side. Thus you see a superiority of the astral processes, and these call forth inflammation conditions. On the other hand, when you have the superiority of the etheric, you get growth processes. And so you can say that in the completely normal feeling life, there occurs a continuous labile equilibrium between the Wucherung, that's the growth, and the Entzündung, that's the inflammation processes. The normal life of human being requires the possibility of being ill. However, there must always occur a continuous Ausgleich, harmonization, equalization. And this makes it possible that one in the main is able to see extraordinary great deal in the feeling life of the human being when you are in a position of being able to see what the illness processes represent, darstellen. One can, if you can observe such things a long time before the physical illness is diagnosed, you can see in the no longer correct functioning of the feeling life, you can confirm the approach of illness. Illness is only an abnormal feeling life of the human being. The feeling life remains in the soul nature of man because in the etheric there is a continuous equalization. As soon as the equalization no longer occurs, then the feeling life hinunterstößt, sinks down into the physical body, unites itself with the body, and as soon as the feeling life shoots into the organ, then you have illness. Thus, if the human being in a normal way can retain the feeling in his soul, then he is healthy. If he can't do that, if the feeling shoots down somewhere into an organ, then there arises illness. You can see from this that the doctor should have a fine eye for the human soul life. Now let's consider the relationship between the ego organization and the physical organization. Let's first consider the process of nutrition. The nutrition process continuously destroys what the substances are in the external world. The astral organism weakens that which occurs through his etheric organism in his inner as a inner equilibrium replacement between the astral and the etheric organism. So we have an equilibrium between the astral and the etheric. Now we have an equilibrium between the ego and the physical organism, an equilibrium between the external world and the inner world, so that one can say salt, as one knows it, is the external world. If the salt is seized hold of, taken hold of, by the nutrition process and the ego organization, so must the ego organization be in the position of transforming everything, not to permit anything which the salt is in the external world to come in. If it does do that, then that signifies a foreign body in the human organism. But this foreign body in the human organism, you must not understand it simply as a foreign body with sharp contours. That is in the least possible cases. But a foreign body can also be the external warmth. You are not allowed to have any warmth in your organism which you yourself have not worked over through the ego organization. Imagine you have the human being, and you must experience in the human being that he is taken hold of in some way from an external warmth condition which he himself has not worked over, just as a piece of wood is taken hold of by an external warmth. External warmth is not for the human being only, doesn't, for the human being is not just a rites, an incitement, in order to call forth a reaction and to work over as your own inner warmth. But if the external warmth or the external cold is permitted to enter directly into the human being, and you see this external cold and external warmth also as a foreign body in yourself, the one can say, the inner equilibrium between illness and health is called forth through the astral and etheric organism. The equilibrium between man and the world is called forth through the polaric contrast between the physical body and the ego organization. The situation is that you must acquire a gaze for the activity of these four members of the human organism. Because you must understand that you can never cognize illness from out of the external physical organism. That which is illness occurs completely in the supersensible. You must already have a concept of the astral organism if you want to arrive at illness understanding. Say that there's a pain occurs in an organ. Indeed, when the astral body is too powerful, the organ is deformed and pain appears. When the organism immediately equalizes the influence of the astral body in the status nascendi, the nascent state, then feeling occurs. But pain, in the main, is just a feeling, only a very accentuated feeling emanating from the deformation. So now you understand why illness is accompanied by pain. You can easily understand why pain occurs when you know that this illness lives only in a strong appearance of feeling, that this feeling works in a deformation way upon the organ. You will be able to realize that all the phenomena of feeling can be able to be judged out of the penetrating consideration of the human life. Naturally, in different people, the situation occurs where one or the other organ is taken over by an excessive activity of the astral body. And take a case when the liver is grasped, taken hold of by the astral body. Now, the liver relates itself quite differently from other organs. The liver is able to be deformed by the astral body to a high degree without pain appearing. That's why liver illnesses are so hidden, because they don't announce themselves by pain. The reason for this is the liver is that particular organ which actually, through its whole constitution, is an enclave in the human organization. In the liver, there occur processes which, of all the processes which occur in the human organism, are to the highest degree similar to the processes in the external world. So that actually, in the liver, man is to the highest degree not man. Man ceases in the liver to be man. He becomes external world. He has in his inner being a portion of the external world. And that is very interesting. Thus we have the external world, and he just draws it. You have the man, and in the human being, something which is a portion of the external world. It's as if in the human organization a kind of hole has been hit into, in Eingeschlagen. And just as though you get no pain if the astral body would press into this piece of fabric, just as less does it make pain when the astral body presses into the liver. The astral body can destroy, but it can't cause pain as far as the liver is concerned, because the liver organ is that organ which is sort of hollowed out, which inwardly is an enclave, a portion of the appears in the as a portion of the external world in the human organism. In the liver, in the inner being of the human being, is the most foreign to the human being. If you consider a human eye or any sense organ, it's as if it's a hurler, a cave, which draws in to the inner of the human being from the external world. In the eye, there occur processes which can be easily grasped by physics. A light ray impinges upon the eye, goes through the lens, it's broken, and in the background it forms a picture in the eye. As far as the ear is concerned, particularly since Helmholtz's time, the ear has become like a piano. Thus, in the sense organs, there exist those considerations which can be applied externally in the world of nature. That is a continuation from the external world into the inner. A portion of the external world continues itself into the inner. You can see in lower animals how the eye has been built from the external world through Hineinstülpung and Ausfüllung from the outside. So the eye really has been built into the organism and hasn't grown out of it. So that in the sense organ, we have a portion of the external world in the organism. But it is open to the external world. The external world goes like a gulf into the organism with the sense organs. But the liver is such that it is on all sides abgeschlossen, cut off on all sides. But it is like a sense organ. That sense organ, that in an actual fact, in our unconscious, has a high sensitivity for the nutrition value of the single substances which we take up. And you must say, only then does one understand that which occurs in digestion in nutrition, when you ascribe to the liver not only those physical processes which are in the main ascribed to it. These are only the expression for a soul spiritual. I can't understand when he says that the processes which occurs in nutrition, which are normally investigated by physical processes, are just an expression for the spirit, soul spiritual. And not only that, Lufsan continues, we must ascribe to the liver, that it is an inner sense organ for the nutrition processes. And it stands, nevertheless, much more related to the earth substances than our ordinary sense organs. As far as the eye is concerned, this is ausgesetzt as an effect to the ether, with the ear, the atmosphere. The liver is directly ausgesetzt to the stofflichen qualities, the substantial qualities of the external world, and has to perceive these substantial qualities. Whereas the eye deals more with etheric action, the ear deals more with the air, the liver goes far more into substance. Now, Lufsana continues, another sense organ is the heart, but whereas the liver is ausgesetzt, is exponiert with her capacity of perception, the external substances which penetrate into the human being. The heart is a sense organ in order to perceive the whole inner of the human being. It's incorrect to consider the heart as a pump which drives the blood through the veins. The motion of the blood is a consequence of the activity of the ego and astral body. In the heart, we have purely a sense organ that perceives the circulation, namely, perceives the circulation from the lower man to the upper man. For example, the liver, so to say, has to see in the process of nutrition, it has to realize what is value, what the value is of any kind of carbohydrate. The heart has to see how the astral body and ego work in the man, in the human being. The heart is a quite spiritual sense organ. The liver is a quite material sense organ. And we must make this distinction. We must arrive at a knowledge of the organs which is a qualitative nature. As natural science, which is at the base of medicine, proceeds. Actually, it looks with the same kind of approach any structure from any part of the organism, so a heart or a liver. And this geweba, this structure, this whole construction is investigated according to its external physical structure and constitution. But with that, you've said nothing about the organ in the human organism. You can take it out, investigate it, fine, that's very good. But you've said nothing about its relationship in the whole total human organism, really. Quite distinction between the function of a knife, a table knife, and the function of a razor. From the external aspect, a razor can also be a table knife. From its external form, I do not know if I'm dealing with a razor or with a table knife. But I must bring everything into the whole connection. So, in a similar way, it's impossible out of a mere observation of an organ in the way it's done today to realize anything about the significance of this organ. I must always consider it in connection with the whole connection. Mere investigation of the structure and constitution of an organ doesn't supply with too much. Its connection, people are frightfully naive. In a certain physiological institute, people have made experiments how mice can be nourished with milk. They can be very finely nourished, and they do progress. They become thick and fat. They did there, they analyzed the milk and gave the composition of the milk to the mice. And then the mice decrepitated in 3 to 4 days. They couldn't be held to life. And what did the people say? They said that the milk not only has its components, which you know, but they have still yet another substance, the vitamin. And so they had to prove the existence of the vitamin. But that's not the way to do it. For example, you can say, here is a watch with a chain. I learn the gold, the silver, I learn about the other metals which are in the watch, the glass, gold, silver, but that's no watch. The watch occurs in that which has been made out of the thought of the mechanic. And it is the thought of the mechanic which, when I consider the milk and its components, that in the components, the earthly qualities are contained, the qualities which the single components receive from the earth. But the side of these components, there are, until a given point of time, there are still present the peripheral forces which proceed from the ether body. So it's not enough to say that here you have a vitamin, you've discovered that. You must approach the whole thing in an entirely different way. If you eat too many potatoes, then you no longer, you get nowhere with just to prove the effect of potatoes in the human organism, that because they have a quantity of carbohydrates. The other carbohydrates, for example, in leaves. Other carbohydrates, for example, present in leaves and not in the in the rootstock, or shall I say, the fruits. They find their working over in the digestion tract. The potato is something extraordinarily remarkable. It penetrates with its forces so deeply into the human organism that that, for example, which occurs as far as the bean is the bone of the bean, as the kidney occurs, the kidney bean occurs within the digestion tract, as far as the potato is concerned, that occurs actually in the brain. In the brain, there are also continuous nutrition processes going on. Thus, the person who eats too much of potatoes can, under circumstances, puts too much burden on its brain. He displaces those processes which should occur underneath the brain. He displaces those processes into the brain. The fundamental difference if a substance occurs in the leaf or in the root. It's much more important than to know that it contains carbohydrate is to know from what part of the plant the carbohydrates emanates. The rootstocks are more united with the head organization, whereas the blossom and the leaf organization are united more with the lower man. The chemical composition of the carbohydrate plays a much lesser role. Let's take another example. Chemistry tells us that oxygen is necessary in the atmosphere, but nitrogen not to the same degree. And one could perhaps deduce from that that it would make very little difference if in any atmosphere there is a lesser quantity of nitrogen, as long as you have enough oxygen. It shows it if within the within a certain atmosphere there's insufficient nitrogen, it's necessary for the human being to deliver up nitrogen in order to replace it, to have the replacement for that in the surrounding atmosphere. In the human being, it's necessary to have a certain relationship between the nitrogen content and the oxygen content, quite independent of the breathing. All these things are of the utmost importance for the knowledge of the human being. Necessary to know how the human being is inserted into his whole environment. And that's what we want to do in our lectures, and through that to throw a light upon the healthy human being as well as upon the ill human being. And that's where the lecture ends. Now I'll give you the summary that the publisher wrote about this second lecture. Characteristics of the members of the human being. Ego and Earthgestalt. Ego and death. Physical organism and nutrition. Relationship of ether body and astral body, and the readiness for illness, the Krankheitsbereitschaft. Presupposition of a conscious soul life. The nature of the feeling, the rising of illness. Inflammation and Wucherung, exuberant growth. Illness and soul life. Liver as a sense organ for the substances of the external world. The heart as a sense organ for the inner world. The organs as an essential wholeness. Judgment of the nutrients out of the world connection with the human organism.